Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The weather started out pretty good in Argentina. Timely rain through corn planting season, but then things really dried out pretty severely from mid-late December into middle of January or so, with a period there where it was hot, where it was dry. Crops were in critical stages of production. So that led us to reduce Argentina's corn production forecast by 1 million tons.
Chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board, Mark Jekanowski.
For Brazil, that would mainly be second crop corn going in after the soybeans leave the field. The soybean harvest has been slow this year since the whole crop was delayed, late start to the soybean planting season. And since we're getting relatively late in the year and the season for planting corn, we expect that could have an impact on yield. So that is driving that 1 million ton reduction in Brazil.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The yeas are 72, the nays are 28, and the nomination of Brooke Rollins is confirmed.
Brooke Rollins from Texas, the new Secretary of Agriculture.
Well, what a joy to be here. That was a great introduction. I tell you what, the people and the men and women of this department that I have already met. We had a really important briefing last night on the avian bird flu right over here in my new office, and I was just so impressed, and I think it is such a great, great sign of things to come, and I'm so grateful. In my confirmation hearing just a few weeks ago before the U.S. Senate of Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry, I said that all Americans are important, but the farmer is the American important to all Americans. That isn't just rhetoric, it is the truth, and here at the United States Department of Agriculture, the tens of thousands of us who serve from sea to shining sea, we walk in the light of that truth in all that we do. That means first and foremost understanding what we do and why. There is great purpose and deep history underlying our work, and it is our North Star. With it, with the knowledge that our revolution was started and fought and won primarily by our farmers. With the knowledge that the American founders understood agriculture and its stewards to be the prerequisite for democratic civics. With the knowledge that Abraham Lincoln understood agriculture to be fundamentally the business of the people in ways no other concern of government was or could be. With the knowledge that we defend a way of life and the constitutive stuff of American liberty in ways no other federal department does. We understand the charge laid before us. We understand that we are not just administrators here at USDA. We are stewards. We understand that we are not just federal employees here at USDA. We are servants to the people and to all Americans. And we understand here at USDA that we do not just have a job. We have a mission. You are my people and I am yours. We have much to do together. We all know this sitting in this room. The need is acute. You all know, and America's farmers and ranchers know most of all, that American agriculture is in its worst economic straits in nearly a century, with grave challenges on prices, on markets, and on labor intersecting all at the same time. You also know that there is a great conversation underway among the American people about agriculture, food, and health. These are challenges and conversations we cannot avoid, and we do not wish to do so. We will be at the center of both, and we will meet them both with professionalism and patriotism that is the foundation of this department and our mission together. Both those qualities were on stark display in the past several weeks in the firefighters of our own U.S. Forest Service who answered the call to defend Americans and American homes in the face of a literally hellish disaster. The bravery, steadfastness, and selfless service of our men and women who stood against the flames is an example to us all.
New Secretary of Ag, Brooke Rollins. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My name is Chris Engelsted. I'm the president of the National Barley Growers Association. I'm a fifth-generation farmer in northwest Minnesota. I farm with my parents and my wife, Maddie, and we have a one-year-old daughter, Cameron. Needless to say, my family has a lot at stake with the U.S. agriculture economy.
Engelstad testifying recently before the Senate Agriculture Committee, a hearing on the ag economy.
As president of the National Barley Growers Association, I represent the perspectives of producers in all the barley-growing regions, which is predominantly the Northern Plains, including Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, and Washington, as well as Wyoming and Colorado. On behalf of the barley growers, I want to thank you for the committee's attention to the challenges facing farmers and for the assistance enacted by Congress in December aimed at mitigating the losses incurred in 2024 and improving the growers' ability to get financing to plant their crops in 2025. I want to know that these actions are very much needed and very much appreciated. As you were, and I'm sure we reflected in many of these statements here today, U.S. farm income has declined for the second consecutive year in 2024, and projections for 2025 and beyond are not favorable. USDA reports a 22.6% decline in net farm income from 2022 to 2024. Receipts for some crops have plummeted over 40%. The trends and outlook for barley are concerning. The depressed market for barley has resulted in farmers having to hold barley for as long as a year or 18 months before the buyers can even take delivery. Planted acres and production are down significantly. In 2024, barley production was down nationally 19%, while production in Montana was down 16%, North Dakota was down 48%, and in my home state of Minnesota was down an alarming 66%. The projections going forward are not good either, as a recent publication by North Dakota State University Extension projects bolting barley prices in North Dakota for the next 5 years to be below the five-year average from 2019 to 2023. As prices are declining, production costs are increasing from 2019 to 2023, as barley in particular has increased 23%. Production costs have leveled off some, but it's not in the recent years, but still has not come back towards cost effective. I'm a relatively young farmer, and addressing the challenges and barriers for new farmers that has been an ongoing concern that the ag community and policymakers have been grappling with. In times like these, when it is difficult to just be cash positive for the year, new and young farmers can't build equity or gain access to capital to improve their operations. So the situation for Minnesota barley is especially concerning, as we're losing crop diversity and crop rotation options. As barley production declines, we are also losing barley processing infrastructure. Loss of that infrastructure will make it more difficult for the production return, even if the market conditions improve in the future. With all the challenges we are facing, it is vital that farm safety net and risk management programs be maintained and strengthened. Our top farm bill priorities include enhancements to the crop insurance as reflected in the Farmer Act introduced by Senator Hoeven in 2024, and improvements to the Farm Bill Title I programs, including an increase in the reference prices under the PLC program. We hope that a new Farm Bill can be enacted this year and that bolsters the safety net for farmers and our national food security. We also want to take this opportunity to share perspectives on the potential for disruptions to markets due to tariffs and trade disputes. We are proud and appreciative that domestic beer producers, both large and small, utilize American-grown barley almost exclusively. U.S. farmers can also produce more than enough barley to meet domestic demand, and barley growers and consumers benefit from exports of barley to Mexico, which is our top export market. Mexican beer producers purchase U.S. barley and produce their brand, then they're exported back to this country for U.S. consumers. Growers, companies, and consumers benefit from a smooth, tariff-free flow of goods, and we urge support for policies that promote fair and beneficial trade between U.S. and Mexico.
Chris Engelstad is a Minnesota farmer, president of the National Barley Growers Association. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Tell you what, it's one of the most positive meetings we've had in a long time, and our members and everybody who's attending here in San Antonio is really just kind of buoyant about what we're seeing in the industry as a whole.
Stephen Orr recently at CattleCon 25 met up with CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Colin Woodall.
One, I think it's because of the weather we're seeing in San Antonio, having some nice warm weather. Everybody's enjoying that. But when you look at the state of the cattle markets are good. We're still posting some historic numbers when it comes to these markets. And on top of that, with the new administration, President Trump and his team, I do believe are going to do a great job in rolling back a lot of the regulatory burden we have seen as producers. And so all of that gives everybody here just a sense of optimism we haven't had in a while.
moving forward, though, and that's the purpose of this convention, one of the deals, all the meetings, is to gather up and what's next? What's the focus of NCBA as we move on into the next couple of years?
Yeah, a lot of work to do. Even with the optimism, there's a lot of work to do. And leading that list is making sure we have some certainty on our tax policy as a country. We are currently working under the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was extremely beneficial to us in agriculture, especially when it comes to the death tax, the estate tax. But a lot of those provisions are going to start to expire here in 2025, including the death tax. What we were able to do in the 2017 bill is to provide some exemption levels that grow over time. Right now, if you are an individual, you can protect $13.99 million worth of your estate as a couple. That's almost $28 million that is exempt from death tax. We want to continue to grow that. We would love to repeal it. That's our policy, but I think our best chance here in this new Congress is to just continue to grow that. But we need that done as soon as possible because the end of the year will be here before we know it. We need to make sure that nobody is caught flat-footed and have to pay exorbitant estate taxes just to maintain their operations and pass it on to the next generation.
With the pace of things in Washington, D.C. right now with this new administration, do you think that's a favorable thing to get some of the things accomplished, or can it get kind of caught in the wash and one that we have to keep in front of them?
Well, this is Washington, D.C., so everything could get caught in the wash. But the thing we have going for us is the president who signed that 2017 tax bill is the same president who's in today, and it's part of his legacy. It's part of what he has promised to deliver to all Americans, but especially those of us in agriculture. So President Trump knows what needs to be done. He's already made this a priority. And with Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate, even though they're slim majorities, they're still majorities. And we believe together that will allow us to get this tax bill done, hopefully before Memorial Day this year.
Colin, with the high prices that we have in the great markets up and down, doesn't this give the beef industry a lot of momentum also in technological advances and biological advances and just to advance the industry more than maybe at a faster clip than we have?
It does, because when people have more money in their pocket, they're willing to spend it on improvements or investments in their operations. And when you look at the industry as a whole and the increase that we have seen in the number of cattle and the amount of beef that are grading choice and prime, it is amazing the improvements we've been able to make, and they're going to continue to grow. And they grow because people are investing in the genetics. They're investing in new technologies, new production practices that ultimately are going to allow them to continue to improve that quality. So I expect a lot of that to happen while we're seeing some money in producers' pockets. And I think long term that is good for us because every time we can provide the consumer with a high quality eating experience, they're going to be more willing to come back and buy even more of our product. And that's the goal. We need the consumer to continue to buy our product that will give us a future.
It's Agriculture Today. With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We will work to ensure that making America great again is also aligned with making America healthy again. They will not exist in opposition to one another, but as a complement and a common mission for our country. But in that conversation, I will always defend American agriculture at the table.
On Friday, the new Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, addressing employees of the department.
First and foremost, we are proud to invite the Department of Government Efficiency here into USDA. They're already here. They've been here for a few weeks, but we are welcoming the efforts because we know that that work will make us better here at USDA. It will make us stronger. It will make us faster, and it will make us more efficient. We will expect full access from all of our teams here at USDA to this effort. And in the days and the weeks to come, I look forward to personally working with all of you and that team as well for a better and stronger USDA. Second, we will end identity politics, identity celebrations, and DEI here at USDA and across all of the federal government. We will neither commemorate nor celebrate our immutable characteristics, neither among ourselves nor among Americans at large. We will instead celebrate the things that make America the best in the world, our merit, our faith, and our liberty first among them. All of our country and all of our people deserve equal dignity, and at this department, we will be the model for that. On the precipice of the 250th anniversary of our American Revolution, we will rededicate to ourselves to the proposition that all men are created equal. Third, we will focus USDA on our core mission of supporting American farming and ranching and forestry. We will work with both the White House and Congress to get it done. This is a long-term effort, but it begins now. This department must return to its basic purpose, and we will work to do so together. And finally, we will return all of our personnel to the workplace, whether that workplace is an office or a farm. Our farmers and ranchers don't work from their homes, and neither will we. They are our models, and we will follow their example. Understand that these are not just expectations from me. These are expectations from the American people, and especially from our American farmers and ranchers who deserve nothing less. We will meet our responsibilities just as the Americans whom we serve do every single day. My promise to you is that I will deliver the same that I ask of you. Each of us has a primary and sole responsibility to the American people. And when and if we remember that, all else will follow. Our goals are ambitious, but over the next 4 years, I am confident that we can position American agriculture to meet the challenges of the present and to continue to lead into the future. American ag is and always, always will be the best in the world. Here at USDA, our service is grounded in the deepest truth of this nation, that we are a people who pioneer the frontier. We settle the plains. We push the bounds of innovation and never stop envisioning new horizons. Together, we are going to bring greater prosperity, greater opportunity, and greater stability to rural communities across this great country. And we will do so faster and better than ever before. Thank you all. And now let's get to work serving the greatest customers in America and the world, all of Americans, but our farmers, our ranchers, and our rural communities.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
As you all know, agriculture is a very capital-intensive industry.
Ryan Talley is a California specialty crop grower.
The land cost, all of our input costs, the way they've escalated over the past 4 or 5 years has been nothing like I've ever seen before. And it really hamstrings our availability of financing to get loan when everything is just costing 30 to 60% more. The available funds are no longer available.
Talley outlining changes for a House Ag Committee. And speaking of changes, Mike Brook is a Kansas State Dairy Extension Specialist.
We've seen many changes in the size of our dairy farms here in the central border of the United States, as well as here in Kansas. You know, when I joined the faculty here over 25 years ago, one of the things we often looked at as we worked with dairy producers was trying to determine how we could ship a semi-load of milk a day off of an individual dairy. Over time, we've seen more and more dairies adopt either larger herds or different production practices so that they could ship a semi-load of milk. This would equate to shipping about 1.5 million pounds of milk per month off of a given dairy. As we look at how this has impacted our farms and we look at how it's impacted the central order, there have been many changes that we have seen in the past 25 years. One of those changes is just the number of farms that actually pool on the order. In 2001, we had 11,683 farms that pooled on the order during 1 month of that year. Today, as we look at data from October of 2024, there were only 1,292 farms that actually pooled milk on the central order that month. Now, as we look at the distribution of those farms, 25% of the farms in the central order, which accounted for only 16, shipped 25% of the total milk that was pooled that month. As we look at the next 30 larger farms, they comprise the next 25% of the milk produced. So as we look at the milk pooled on the order in the month of October of 2024, only 3.56% of the farms marketed 50% of the milk that month. Now, closer to home, right here in Kansas, what do we see? As we look again from that October 2024 data, we had 24 farms in the state that marketed 91% of the milk. So those 24 farms would have been farms that were shipping more than a semi-load a day. As we look across the border to the west, to Colorado, a few more farms involved. 54 farms shipped 94% of the milk pooled that month. Looking to the north, only 9 dairies in Nebraska shipped 84% of that pooled milk. So as we look at the data, what does it mean for our Kansas dairy producers? Well, we continue to grow in number, and when it looks at these larger farms, more and more farms are producing larger amounts of milk. We do have fewer dairies that are producing less than a semi-load of milk each day. So as we look at what we might need to change in the future on our dairies, some of the things we might need to think about is if we're going to be in the commercial dairy business, we're probably going to have to look at how we ship more than a semi-load of milk a day off of our particular farm. If we're not going to be part of that game, then we need to see how we can add value to our milk, whether that be on-farm processing or other marketing agreements that would increase the value of that milk.
It's Agriculture Today. You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Strategically, we all know the big markets, right? We know that Japan, Korea, and Mexico in particular, and Canada are big markets, but we're seeing some regions emerge beyond that.
At the recent CattleCon 25, Stephen Orr catching up with Dan Hallstrom, CEO, U.S. Meat Export Federation.
Yeah, Central America is one. Markets like Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador. These markets used to be price markets when the price was right, and now there are 52-week-a-year buyers, and they're following the market. And let's be honest, it's a high market, right, compared to the last few years. So the emergence of some of these regions is exciting. Other regions, ASEAN region, the Southeast Asian region is another one, specifically places like Indonesia, Malaysia on the pork side. These are areas that we only have a fraction of the access. As we get more access, there'll be more payback there long term as well. And of course, one of the really new regions of the world is Africa. African, North Africa, as well as West Africa. These are areas that we're not putting a lot of money into, but we're putting a lot of time into them because, you know, we're just at the tip of the iceberg there. So yeah, if you look at it as a whole, it's exciting.
When you look at the next 12 months, what are some of the real challenges you see or opportunities to overcome as you grow those markets?
Well, yeah, one of the obvious challenges has been a strong U.S. dollar. That's been the case for the last several years. You know, you look at Japan, you know, 155 to 160 yen to the dollar is 30-year highs, right? So a higher U.S. dollar makes us much more expensive in local currency terms. Despite all that, and it's not just Japan, it's Korea, it's China, it's the list goes on, it's Mexico. All these major markets, we have a strong dollar, relative, and we're still performing. So that tells me that's an obstacle, but the benefit is that the demand for our product, uniqueness of our product, overrides some of these obstacles or some of these headwinds. The other way to look at it is if we didn't have these headwinds, how good would it really be within, you know, that's the glass half full focus. If we ever do get a break on a dollar, we'll be that much more competitive. But yeah, I think it's a real testament to the fact that our quality, our safety, our reputation overrides a lot of these headwinds.
As you look forward over the next couple of years, what are some of your priorities with USMEF and things you'll be focused on?
Well, I think, number one, we work very closely with our constituents, NCBA being one on the beef side, National Pork Board, and the pork producers on the pork side. You know, one of the things that we're really is supporting their efforts, we want to make sure that the animal health continues to be top-notch, and we don't want any foreign animal diseases because that's a direct link to limited access for exports, not to mention financially, you know, disaster for the domestic industry. So we're very supportive of the industries in that regard. I think as well this balance to defend our large billion-dollar export markets to Japan's, the Koreas, the Mexicos, but at the same time, allocating additional resources to some of these new emerging regions we just talked about, because you know, the investment we make today, it will definitely have payback in a lot of these places 5 to 10 years down the road. So it's a balancing act. We never have enough funding to do everything we want to do, so we gotta allocate in a fiduciary manner. And I think we're seeing results. I mean, Central America is a good example on both beef and pork. They were not that big a player or 5 years ago, and between the two of them now, it's $500 million in sales. So, you know, I'd take a lot of $500 million markets if we could just dial them up tomorrow.
It's Agriculture Today. Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Senators voting in the affirmative. Barrasso, Bozeman, Capito.
The roll call and vote on the floor of the U.S. Senate Thursday for the nomination of Brooke Rollins as Secretary of Agriculture. And once voting concluded,
the ayes are 72, the nays are 28, and the nomination of Brooke Rollins is confirmed.
The Texas native becomes the 33rd U.S. Agriculture Secretary. Once taking the oath of office, the incoming secretary says among her priorities per last month's Senate Ag Committee confirmation hearing,
we must ensure that the disaster and economic assistance authorized by Congress is deployed as quickly and as efficiently as possible. We must work with the great men and women of USDA, the stakeholder communities, and state leaders to immediately and comprehensively get a handle on the state of animal disease outbreaks.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.